You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Greetings to all the tribes of Israel who are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, and Nordic peoples, our brothers and sisters around the world. And may I say we love our brothers and sisters, and we always will. May we gather the tribes together. May we stick together like glue. And may we see our destiny come to fruition in our Most High God Yahweh, the only God. The title of this message is Freemasonry, the Religion of Fools, Part 6. Yes, it is a religion. I have those that wish to argue with me. It's also a science, but it's a religion. And as the buzzards of Freemasonry circle around, they try to do damage control, and they will not be able to, you see. Because when you've got it from the horse's mouths, you've got it from the horse's mouths. I've already been through all these things with these Freemasons. They try to deny, they say this is a lie, they say that's a lie. But when it comes down, they don't realize that I know that they're liars. They've been taught by the greatest liars of the world, the Jews, who are the sons and daughters, the literal offspring, of the father of all lies, Hillel, Lucifer, Shaitan, the serpent. You know the names, Baphomet, etc. So, we've come to number 6 here. I never thought we'd go past number 1, but Yahweh provided many messages and many proofs of what I was telling you. We saw early in that there were many quotes, and we saw how it all linked up, that Freemasonry and the press were two weapons used by the Jews since the 1700s, probably earlier than that. But I showed you many different examples, whether it was from Adam Weishaupt's time, right into the time of Hitler. Also in 1800s, we showed you something there where it was talking about how they control everything through the secret societies and through the press, because they've got control fully. Freemasonry, we also showed that Freemasonry is Jewish from top to bottom and inside and out. Showed that it is a secret society, or a bunch of secret societies, that is used as a worldwide headquarter for the Jews. They've used these things for major revolutions and wars and all kinds of, for murder. They've used it for all kinds of things. And who have they used, ladies and gentlemen? Well, the visible. You see, the Jew is the invisible. That's what Adam Weishaupt was, to create an invisible society within the visible societies of secret societies, of Freemasons, Rosicrucians, etc., etc. So the invisible, of course, would be the Jew, as I've already explained. And the visible is the Shabbos Goy, white race traitor. You see, I'll review a little bit for you. The Shabbos Goy, white race traitor, was recruited into the lodge. And it was through intellect. It was through flattery. It was through the ideas that you would be a cut above all other people. The profane, like me. I'm the profane. I'm the common man. You see? And they have all this intellect which they've received from Hillel and his children. The promise in the garden, as we went through everything. You know, it's funny, as I reflect on all the messages that I've done, right from the first message right on through, it all shows you about Hillel and his children. And it shows you about the intellect. When I did the box, the cube, and the monolith, these are all shows that you Freemasons should be listening to. Because even as much as you think you know, Yahweh knows more than you do. And even as much as you think that you're superior intellectually to all of us profane ones, you're just fooling yourself. You see, I had said this already, is that in your attempt to exalt yourself, you have brought yourself down to the position below the lowest of the low, the Jews. The Jew is the traitor of the world. The Jew is the enemy of the world. And you have joined the Jew organization, and you have been trapped within this organization, and you are a tool of the Jew. You have made yourselves enemies of Yahweh, enemies of your nation, enemies of your race, and you probably don't even realize it, and probably wouldn't agree with it even if I sit here and prove it to you. Because you're probably not willing to listen. You can't teach an old demon new tricks. I had one fellow tell me, oh, I don't believe in demons. I stopped believing in demons a long time. You're going to believe in them. Believe me, you're going to believe in them. Because where you're going is where the Jew is going. And you're going to have first hand experience with them. So, we found out that Hitler knew that Freemasonry was a tool used by the Jew, and that the Jew controlled Freemasonry outright. This is no secret. The Jew will tell you that himself. I also would mention to you that I have a movie that I remastered on my channel, which I would suggest you check out. It's called Forces Occult. And it is very important because it will reveal to you what you're involved in. And the man who made the movie was killed for making the movie. It's a French movie, if you hadn't figured that out already. So, Freemasonry is an enemy of the world. You say that's not true. We're beneficent. We have burn centers. Come on, pal. We know, I've already explained about the dualism and the equilibrium. If you were to sum up Freemasonry in one word, it would be equilibrium. If one does dirty deeds, one must do good deeds to match them. As if you thought that by doing these good deeds that Yahweh was going to forgive you for the dirty deeds. But that just isn't so. Because you can't be double-minded. You can't be double-tongued. You can't be double-hearted. You can't serve two masters. Because then you will hate the one and love the other. So the Jew pretends he's a dual citizen. But you can't. You see, they only love their little pretend land over there in Israel. You know, Freemasons, the ones that you want to build Solomon's temple back in. See, you don't even realize that the Jew has given you all his wishes, and now they're your wishes. You see, if you have a dual citizen who's a Jew, he hates America. He doesn't care about America. Look at Jonathan Pollard. He stole all the secrets and gave them. They're partial to who they are because they know who they are. You don't know who they are. I told you people that we are the tribes of Israel, that the Caucasian people that came over the Caucasus Mountains and inhabited Europe and eventually America are the true seed of Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel, who had 12 sons that became the 12 tribes of Israel. And that the Jew has nothing to do with Israel or Jacob, other than many, many years ago when he had a brother named Esau. But Esau was a race mixer and is no longer of the Semitic race. So the Jew has no place in Israel, and the Father Yahweh, whom you hate, Mr. Freemason, who the Jew hates, he has no part in that land over there. That land is not big enough for the true Israelites to inhabit. Do you understand that? We, the true Israelites, will not be going back to Jerusalem. It's too small for us. We couldn't live there. The tribes are too big. Yet we're shrinking at this point. But we're too many people to inhabit that. And Yahweh never promised that we'd go back there. That's an idea of the Jew. That's a psychological operation of the Jew. And to call it Israel is another psychological operation all in one. And the Jew intends on reinstituting animal sacrifice. But you see, Yahweh has no intention on reinstituting animal sacrifice because Yeshua, Jesus, I know you Freemasons hate that name. Let me say it again for you. Listen real close up to the... Get yourself up close so I can whisper it in you. Jesus. Jesus. You know the name that you can't name in the lodge? You can name Buddha. You can name Krishna. You can name Osiris. You can name Baphomet. But you can't name... Listen again now. Jesus. Now, we also know that there's many Jesuses, but his name is Yeshua, which means Yahweh saves. And that was the end of sacrifice, animal sacrifice. See, because there is no remission of sins without the shedding of blood. However, that blood has been shed. And that part of the Old Testament is over with. However, the law is not over with. We are to obey Yahweh's laws and statutes. And if we love him and are his children, we will. You see, when you keep the north side of the lodge dark, it's because you are dissing, let's say, and to put it in new language, new speak, you are dissing Yahweh and saying that he's not the light, because Yahweh resides in the north. You tell me it's not a religion, but you go to the temple and you perform ceremonies. And you circumambulate. And you perform rites. What else can that mean but religion? Now, I know that Freemasonry is also known as a science. It's a science that is against the living God. And I know that the Rosicrucians were the scientists before Masonry. Because when they talk about their intellect, they talk about soul science. So, I've already given several accounts of proof that Freemasonry is a religion. But we also see the double cube in the lodge. We had spoken about that before. I had told you right out of one of their books, I believe it was The Hidden Life in Freemasonry, where the double cube, which looks like the Ark of the Covenant, is right in the lodge. You see, of course it's a religion. And it'll be proven here again today. So, you've made yourselves enemies of Yahweh because you are now twice the child of hell that the Jew is. You've decided. See, let me go on and tell you, let me go back to what I was saying at the beginning here, is that when the white Shabbos Goy race trader joins the lodge, the purpose of him being there is multifold. What it is, number one, the Shabbos Goy is the one that's going to be the visible part of the lodge, who's going to take the heat if anything comes down. Number two, the Shabbos Goy has been recruited into the lodge to make him an enemy of Yahweh and turn him into a tool for the Jew to use. Forces Occult will show you this. It's plain and simple. You can deny and deny and deny and deny all you want. But it is what it is, sonny boy. So you become a tool of the Jew here, and that neutralizes you from being a potential. You see, because Freemasonry recruits the best they can get from the white race, the Caucasian race, which is the seed of Jacob, the true Israel of the Bible. And that neutralizes you and puts you in opposition to Yahweh, opposition to your country, because even in the lodge, we know that the police can't come in the lodge and arrest you. Because the lodge is almost like Washington, D.C. The Jew has made it this way. So, you, in your attempt, remember, he who humbles himself shall be exalted, and he who exalts himself shall be humbled. So in your attempt to exalt yourself through Freemasonry, because they flattered you, and we know that knowledge puffeth up. So now, you know, I've seen several of you people. I know that you walk around and say, "This, you people are so stupid. The public is stupid. Nobody's smart like we are. You're all idiots. I'm intellectual." That's what I was promised. That's what Eve was promised in the garden. That she would be gods. She would be a god like God, knowing good and evil like you do, Mr. Freemason. And she fell for it because she was tempted to be a god. And this same tempter, his offspring, have lured you into the lodge, and now you are trapped within it. Trapped within it by your own intellect. Trapped in it by your own pride. You could never leave now and say you were wrong all these years, could you? You could never admit, especially now that you have all this knowledge, you could never admit that you were wrong in joining this lodge, could you? And let's take this in account as well, is that knowledge is not superior to wisdom. Wisdom is the application of knowledge. So therefore, wisdom is much more valuable than just knowledge. So as the serpent, the beguiler, promised in the garden that she would become like gods, knowing good and evil, that her and Adam would be, when Yahweh said, "You will die," we also saw that the Freemason's apron was the representation of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And the same way that Adam and Eve had performed the sexual sin and covered their genital area, the Freemason covers their genital area because they have eaten of the fruit of the tree of good and evil. See? Yes, that is so. And we read that right out of a book here. We read it right out of a book, so don't deny it. So we've also shown here that Freemasonry is more than a man's little club where they get together and learn a few things. We showed that there were demons involved. They call them angels. Read the book, The Hidden Life in Freemasonry by C.W. Ledbetter, and you'll find right there and then you'll have the proof. Now, I have another book that proves about spirits in Freemasonry right here. I cannot read you this whole book, but I thought it was intriguing because it's called The Revelations of a Square. I'm surprised they haven't made a movie about it. It seems like something like Disney would have made a movie about, because the original fellow there, Walt Disney, was a Freemason. So, chapter one, the revival, D.E. des Aguilers, 1717 to 1722. I Could a Tale Unfold, by Shakespeare. Dost feel a wish to learn this thing of me? Titania. Okay. So he starts off, I'm only going to read a portion of this book, but enough so that you will get the gist of what's happening here. A friend and brother who resides in town, knowing that I am somewhat of a dabbler in antiquities, forwarded to me some time ago an old silver square, which he told me had the reputation of having been used in one of the earliest lodges after the revival of masonry in 1717. This is, of course, in England. Of course, I found it an object of great interest, and value it accordingly. Although a good deal battered, the inscription is still distinctly visible. On one limb of its upper face is the following legend: Keep within compass. And on the other, Act on ye square. At the angle of junction is a rude heart with the letter J on it. The reverse is blank, with the exception of two small old English capitals, C and W, at the angle. The jewel is soon described, but how am I to portray my feelings when, with the instrument lying on the table before me, I called up the spirits of the dead and contemplated scenes of bygone times, the working of the lodges, the solemn labors, and convivial refreshments which this small token had witnessed. The racy jests and sparkling wit which set the table on a roar after the hours of business were past. This was the age when the facetious Dr. Sheridan reduced punning to a system, and it was practiced by rule and compass, and therefore we may readily believe that the lodges had their share of it. Oh, I exclaimed out loud, if this square could speak, what interesting scenes it might reveal, and how it would enlighten us about the doings of Freemasonry at the time of its revival. I had been sitting late one evening in contemplation of the scenes which took place in the palmy days of Masonry, when Desaguliers, Payne, Anderson, Lamball, Morris, Timpson, and their compeers were at the helm of affairs. A dull and dreamy sensation came over me, and I saw, or fancied I saw, the square, which had just been reposing motionless before me, raise itself up with great solemnity on the exterior points of its two limbs, which seemed to assume the forms of legs. Body it had none, but the heart, which was delineated at the angle, put forth two eyes, a snub nose, and a mouth, a sort of amplification of the letter J. I could trace the features distinctly as we see the figure of a human face in the fire on a winter's night. While I was considering what all this could mean, I heard a small, thin voice pronounce my name. Okay, you see what's happening here, right? You see that now, that since he's been given this square, obviously there is a spirit attached to the square. There is a spirit that was there with that square at that time in Freemasonry in the beginning that he's talking about. So now he's heard a voice. To say I was merely surprised at this unexpected phenomenon would be too tame an expression. I was utterly astonished and confounded. I rubbed my eyes and looked around the room. Everything appeared exactly as usual. No change could I perceive. The fire burned brightly. The books covered the walls, the candles cast their usual light, and the ticking of the spring clock over my head preserved its usual monotony. I began to fancy, and I had been mistaken. I began to fancy that I had been mistaken, when my name was again uttered by the same unearthly voice, and there stood the little fellow, as if determined to indulge in some demoniacal soliloquy to which I was constrained to listen. At length it communicated its intention by saying, "Attend to me, and I will realize all your wishes, by enlightening you, enlightening you, on the subject of your meditations, and giving you the benefit of my experience. But first, let me caution you not to utter a single syllable, for if you do, the charm will be broken. The sound of the human voice silences me forever." I was originally the property of a brother whose extensive genius has invested his name with immortality, Sir Christopher Wren. So now you know what the C and the W was. Sir Christopher Wren, Grand Master of Masonry at the latter end of the 17th century, which fell into destitute, they spell it a little different, when King George I had the impolicy to supersede this great man in favor of Brother W. Benson, and so disgusted him with the world that he declined all public assemblies and, amongst the rest, relinquished his connection with Freemasonry. The craft refused to meet or hold any communication with the new Grand Master, and Masonry languished for several years, till it was supposed to be extinct. And Dr. Plott exulted in the idea that he had given it its death blow by some ill-natured animadversions in the history of Staffordshire. In the year 1712, a person of the name of Simeon Townsend published a pamphlet which he entitled Observations and Inquiries Relating to the Brotherhood of Freemasons, and a few others had been issued on the decline of the order as if triumphing its fall. About this time, Dr. Desaguliers, a fellow of the Royal Society and professor of philosophy, was gradually rising into eminence. In the course of his scientific researches, the above works fell into his hands. He did not find them very complimentary to the fraternity, but they excited his curiosity, and he was made a Mason in the old lodge at the Goose and Gridiron in St. Paul's Churchyard, and subsequently removed by him to the Queen's Arms Tavern in the same locality, where the Grand Lodges were afterwards frequently held. The peculiar principles of the craft struck him as being eminently calculated to contribute to the benefit of the community at large, if they could be redirected into the channel from which they had been diverted by the retirement of Sir Christopher Wren. Dr. Desaguliers paid a visit to this veteran Freemason for the purpose of consulting him on the subject. The conversation of the past Grandmaster excited his enthusiasm, for he expatiated with great animation on the beauties of the order and the unhappy prostration which had recently befallen it. From this moment, the doctor determined to make some efforts to revive Freemasonry and restore it to its primitive importance. "You may perhaps be inclined to inquire," said the Square, very naively, "how I became acquainted with these facts. As I was then quietly reposing in the draw of a cabinet along with Sir Christopher's collection of curiosities. The truth is that the venerable old gentleman had taken a liking to Dr. Desaguliers and presented me to him with the rest of his Masonic regalia. From henceforth I was privy to all the doctor's plans, and as he soon rose to the chair of his lodge, I had the advantage of hearing almost every conversation he had with his Masonic friends on the subject nearest to his heart, which generally occurred in the lodge, with your humble servant at his breast suspended from a white ribbon. Every plan was carefully arranged, and the details subjected to the most critical supervision before it was carried into execution, and by this judicious process his schemes were generally successful, thus having been in active operation from a period anterior to the revival of Masonry. I have witnessed many scenes which may be both amusing and instructive to record, as the good may prove an example of worthy imitation, and the evil, should there be any, may act as a beacon to warn the unwary brother to avoid the quicksands of error which will impede his progress to Masonic perfection. They sure do speak a lot about how moral they are, but they sure do a lot of dirty deeds. Brother Desaguliers, having intimated his intention of renovating the order, soon found himself supported by a party of active and zealous brothers, whose names merit preservation. They were Sayer, Payne, Lamball, Elliot, ooh, a Jew name, Gofton, Cordwell, Denoyer, Vreden, King, another Jew, Morris, Calvert, another Jew, Ware, Lumley, and Madden. These included the masters and wardens of the four existing lodges at the Goose and Gridiron, the Crown, the Apple Tree, and the Rummer and Grapes, and they succeeded in forming themselves into a grand lodge and resumed the quarterly communications which had been discontinued for many years. And having thus replanted the tree, it soon extended its stately branches to every quarter of the globe. There was no code of laws in existence at that period to regulate the internal economy of the lodges, except for a few brief bylaws of their own, which, in fact, were a little more than a dead letter, for the brethren acted pretty much as their own judgment dictated. Any number of Masons, not less than 10, that is to say, the master, 2 wardens, and 7 fellowcrats, with the consent of the magistrate, were empowered to meet and perform all the rites and ceremonies, see religion, ceremonies of Masonry, with no other authority than the privilege which was inherent in themselves, and had ever remained unquestioned. They assembled at their option and opened their lodges on the highest of hills or in the lowest of valleys, in commemoration of the same custom adopted by the early Christians, who held their private assemblies in similar places during the 10 great persecutions which threatened to exterminate them from the face of the earth. But as this privilege led to many irregularities, continued my companion, and was likely to afford a pretext for unconstitutional practices, it was resolved that every lodge to be hereafter convened, except the 4 old lodges at this time existing, should be legally authorized to act by a warrant from the Grand Master for the time being, granted to certain individuals on petition, with the consent and approbation of the Grand Lodge in communication. So, basically, I don't really think I need to read any more. Now, this is very interesting. There's no doubt about it that it's very interesting. But we see here now that we're dealing with spirits again in Freemasonry. This spirit, which is attached to the square somehow, whether the spirit lives in the square, or whether the spirit is a companion of the square, or you know how they have, I forget what they call those, when you have a spirit that's sort of with you, you know, I forget what it's called, but that's basically what it is. So we are dealing with demons. These certainly wouldn't be angels from Yahweh. Let me just clarify that and make that very clear, especially when Yahweh is the enemy of the lodge. So I thought you'd find that interesting, and that is from a book called The Revelations of a Square. So let's see what else we have here. Okay, this is one of the greatest men of Freemasonry. His name is Albert Mackey, and this is called The Mystic Tie. What is Freemasonry? This is from chapter 1. Of course, I will not be able to read the whole book. The Mystic Tie. What is Freemasonry? The definitions which have been given of Freemasonry are almost as various as the writers who have furnished them. They all, however, concur in representing it as an institution whose objects and tendencies are charitable and moral and social and scientific. There it is again, scientific, ladies and gentlemen. Among these definitions, one of the most comprehensive is that to be found in English lectures. Freemasonry is a science of morality, veiled in an allegory and illustrated by symbols. Remember, they hide their... Yes, familiar spirit. Chris P. just hit me with that. That's called a familiar spirit. So that's probably what this spirit is that was with that square. I couldn't think of it. But that's what it is, or, you know, it lives in the square, one or another. So back here again. This definition has been extended by Dr. Hemming, who revised the English lectures in the following language. Masonry, according to the general acceptation of the term, is founded on several principles of geometry and directed to the convenience and enlightenment of the world, but embracing a wider range and having more extensive object in view. The cultivation and improvement of the human mind. It assumes the form of a noble science and availing itself of terms in geometrical calculations. It inculcates the principles of the purest morality by lessons which are, for the most part, clothed in allegory and illustrated by symbols. So yes, that's what I was saying. They hide their doctrines within the symbols, and symbols are for those that can read them and can understand them. And symbols have many different meanings, not just one meaning, as discussed earlier in this series, as you will hear if you listen to it. Freemasonry, then, most prominently presents itself to our view as a science of symbolism. In the teachings of the ancient priesthood, primarily of the East and then of Egypt, this science was first developed. Among them, it was organized into a beautiful and impressive system in which the most profound lessons of divine truth were taught in images of poetical form. It was thus that the ancient philosophers communicated all their instructions to their disciples. It is difficult, says Brother Rockwell, for the unreflecting to appreciate the use of symbolism. To us, whose cursive method of graphic communication seems not to be the result of long-continued and repeated stages of improvement, the hieroglyphic writing of the ancient Egyptians appears to be the fantastic sport of ingenious inventors, tasking their utmost skill for artistic concealment or ludicrous perversion. In the days of pharaonic glory, however, this was a necessary part of the education of the prince, the priest. See, there's your religion, the priest and the scholar. As any age of the varied branches of modern science that now engage our philosophers or occupy the time of our schools, this system or science of symbolism adopted by the ancient peoples to convey lessons of worldly wisdom as well as of religious knowledge. A system in which material things were referred to and in which truth was not so much veiled as it was developed in tropes and figures, lost as it is to all the rest of the world, has been preserved and perpetuated in Freemasonry alone. Hence, then, the rites and ceremonies of Masonry, its secret modes of initiation, its traditions and legends, its jewels and emblems, are not unmeaning compositions, arbitrarily adopted to suit the taste of fancy or their inventors, but are the means judiciously and wisely intended by a method which has the sanction and is recommended by the experience of the remotest antiquity to communicate the light and knowledge of divine truth. The light. See, the problem with this light, as I've told you several times, is this is not the true light of Yahweh. This is the false light of Lucifer. And this is, it's not that there's no truth in Masonry, and it's not that they don't learn things, they don't fill themselves with knowledge. It just depends on what kind of knowledge and what kind of light it really is. And divine truth is by perspective, as far as I'm concerned, as far as anybody's concerned. And this divine truth consists not in erratic speculations on questions of polemic theology, not in the inculcation of sectarian and contracted views of religious faith, but in the inquiry into the true nature of God and the human soul. The problem word is God right there. Who is that God? Why, that God is anybody but Yahweh. Any God but Yahweh. Except there's a problem with that. There is no such thing as any other God but Yahweh. He is the Most High. Not Amun-Ra. Not Lucifer. Lucifer is a wannabe god, an angel who had fallen. He is not a god. Yes, you may say Yeshua called him the god of this world, the little g. Well, it certainly is real little. But Albert Pike himself said that these are equal to one another, as I had told you before. That Yahweh is equal to Lucifer, that you have to have good and bad, white and black, light and shade. However, that's a lie. Not that you'd have to have light and shade, or good and dark, good and evil, or white and black, equilibrium, but that there is no equality between Yahweh and Lucifer. Zero equality. And the light that comes from either one of them, the light that comes from Yahweh is true light. Whereas the light that comes from Lucifer is a false light. It's a distorted light. Remember the, as Dave was going through in 2001, A Space Odyssey, when he was becoming a god. And he was going through the corridors of light. The light was distorted. The light was light, and he was receiving more and more light as he went down the corridor of light in the spaceship. However, It's the same as you going up in the degrees of Freemasonry. Oh, yes, you're receiving light. And you're receiving light from Lucifer. And you're receiving helpers and attendants, so-called angels, that give you more and more light. However, it's not giving you any more wisdom. Only wisdom comes from Yahweh. And only Yahweh's light is pure and good. And you can argue all day long. I'm going to let you argue with him, Mr. Shabez Goy, race trader, who hates your own race. Yes, Freemason, you hate your own race. I don't care if you say you love your race or not. I know just by joining that lodge and joining the Jews, who are the literal offspring of Shaitan, Samael, Halel, Lucifer. Lucifer is just the Latin name for Halel. Halel is the Hebrew. Now, let's go on a little bit. I'm not going to go on too far in this here, but let's find out a little bit more because we want to read about what Freemasonry is. But in the inquiry into the true nature of God and the human soul, these are the inspiring and elevating topics which it is the design of Masonry to discuss. These are the doctrines which it seeks to investigate. When, then, we are asked, what is Freemasonry? We answer, in the first place, that it is a science which engages us into the search after divine truth. See, you may call that a science, but it is religion that man seeks the divine truth in. So you can color it any way you want with any kind of word you want, but Masonry is a religion. Yes, it is a science of sorts in the same way I just told you about soul science. Freemasonry is a spawn of the Rosicrucian orders. And I told you that's where science began, in the Rosicrucian orders. You know, I understand about the alchemy, but they were working with real scientific things as well. You see, the science of alchemy is turning lead into gold. And the representation of that is really what it is turning man into man perfected, which is God, as I told you before. Now, I have the secret of Freemasonry on my channel, and the buzzards of Freemasonry were circling around it, and it goes right into everything in their books, and it explains everything right out, and they sit there and try to do damage control, and it just cannot be done. It never will be done, because Yahweh has exposed it to his light. And it is what it is. You can pretend, you can deny, you can lie, you can say this is a lie, you can do whatever you want, you can accuse, but you lose, and Yahweh wins. Glory to Yahweh, the Most High, the only God, the true God of Israel and the tribes. No, the tribes are not lost. The tribes came over the Caucasus Mountains, as I told you, inhabited Europe, and eventually Australia and America. Deny it all you wish. So, when you're searching, okay, so we will go on here just a little further. Freemasonry is, then, also a religious institution. Yes, let me say that again. This is on page 3 of this book by Albert Mackey. And I'm sure if I was talking to a Freemason, he'd say to me, who's Albert Mackey? Who? I don't know who he is. Who's Albert Mackey? And I'd say to the Freemason, Freemasonry is a religion. Oh, no, it's not. No, it's not a religion. Now, I'm going to read this again to you right here. Freemasonry is, then, also a religious institution. The very science which it inculcates is in itself the science of religion. Not a religion of forms and creeds, but a universal religion, which I had already told you before. That's what it's all about. Any god. You can worship a doorknob and be a Freemason. You can be a Hindu and you could worship a doorknob as your god, and you could be part of Freemasonry. Just as long as you don't bring up the name, again, Jesus in the lodge. You can bring up anybody else's name that you want, any god you can think of. Just do not bring his name up. Does that make you think? There's only one other people on this planet that I know about that hate that name. Can you guess who that is, Mr. Shabez Goy Freemason? Why, it's the Jew. The Jew. Read in the Talmud what it says about Jesus and his mother. So, it says, not a religion of forms and creeds, but a universal religion whose theology embraces the important dogmas of a supreme creator. Yes, the grand architect of the universe, which is not Yahweh, it's Lucifer. And of a future existence in which, leaving formulas of faith untouched, strives only to inspire its disciples. You see, if it wasn't a religion, why are you seeking light? It says in the Bible that we are to be the light of the world. Jesus is the morning star. Yahweh is light. If you're not a religion, and a fake religion at that, why are you seeking light? Why are you doing ceremonies? Why are you circumambulating? Why are you performing rites? Why do you worship at the temple? Okay, I think probably enough of that, eh? Let's see what else I have here for you lovely people. Okay, another proof here, and I won't read this whole book either. This is called The Star in the East. Remember, they looked to the Eastern Star. Remember that when they came to see the star that was over our Messiah, that star was not in the East. The Magi came from the East to seek the star over Bethlehem. These people seek a star in the east, thus the Eastern Star, the female organization. So this is called the Star in the East. And that's when you would ask them, are you a fellow traveler? And they'd say, one of the answers was, I'm traveling to the east. You see? Before we enter into this discussion, it will be proper to determine precisely what religion is. In the common and most correct acceptation of the word, according to Cicero, the ancients believed religion to be the study and practices of divine worship. The Christian differs from the heathen world in the interpretation for religion. Bishop Wilkins defines religion to be that general habit of reverence towards the divine nature, whereby we are enabled and inclined to worship and serve God, after such a manner as we conceive most agreeable to His divine will. Now, we remember that I was reading out of The Hidden Life in Freemasonry, and they were talking to Lucifer, and they were creating the temple for Amun-Ra. Okay? And I told you that Ra in Hebrew means evil. This is, you know, extremely interesting. But anyway, let's continue on right here. Religion, then, is a system of practical duties, and thus stands opposed to theology, which is a system of speculative truths. The moral duties which a man commits to practice in this probationary state with a view of pleasing his Creator are acts of pure religion, which produce a corresponding influence on the mind and manners, and display his nature as superior to the rest of creation. They shew that a man has a rational soul, and from his unrestrained freedom of will, by choosing evil or pursuing good, his personal responsibility is demonstrated, whence, at some distant period, he will be brought to account for his actions, whether they be good or whether they be evil, and receive an equitable recompense from the even hand of impartial justice. Now, you got a little problem there, Mr. Freemason, because, you see, you're saying that it's morals, that your order is moral, and yet you ascribe to communism, you do the will of the Jew, you have been involved in all the major wars and revolutions in this world's history, you do as much evil as you do good in order to balance that out, which is equilibrium, the trestle board floor, white and black, even white and black, right? But now listen to what it says. We've got a little problem here. Whence, at some distant period, he will be brought to account for his actions, whether they be good or whether they be evil, and receive an equitable recompense for the even hand of impartial justice. Well, if you've done as much good as you have evil, you're in trouble. Because you have not repented. You must repent of your evil deeds. And you must obey Yahweh's laws. And you must turn from evil. And you must do your neighbor good. And you must not worship any other god. And obviously you people do. You see, it is a religion. And I don't care what you say. So you've got a real problem. You can do all the good you want, but if you've done just as much evil, you think that's going to balance out, and you think Yahweh's just going to say, oh, you've done just as much evil as good, so you're all set, pal. That's not the way it works. You see how smart you think you really are, but you're not smart. It's idiotic. You are lower than the Jew. You are twice the child of hell that the Jew is, because you are a race traitor. You are causing your race damage. 2/3 of our race has been killed in the last 150 years, and it's a result of the evil that you people and the Jew and their father has done. They are responsible for the blood all the way from Abel to Zacharias, whom they slayed in the temple, and now they are responsible for all the children they've killed through abortion. They are responsible for what happened in post-World War II Germany, the innocent blood of the tribe of Judah, who is Germany. They are also responsible for Russia, what took place in Russia with the Bolshevik Revolution. Yes, the hammer and the sickle, which I told you about last week, the hammer is Tubal Cain's hammer. And the sickle is the instrument of death. Freemasonry and the Jew is responsible for all that blood. You see, this is how it works. If you recompense evil for good, then you will be partaker of the sins of those who do that. And that's the Jew. And you are a tool of the Jew. And you think you're so smart and you don't even know that. You probably don't even believe that Freemasonry is Jewish from top to bottom. Yet Albert Pike says Judaism is the Kabbalah. I mean that Freemasonry is Judaism. And it's the Kabbalah. Who's Albert Pike? Who's that? I don't know who that is. Albert Pike. I never heard of him. Well, you're gonna hear of him. Listen to this nonsense. Freemasonry was revealed by God himself to the first man. He's saying Freemasonry was revealed to Adam. Actually, Adam is not the first man. Adam is the first Adamic man. See, because there were races here before Adam. Adam was put here to tend the garden. That's us, the Caucasian race. Adam, or Adam, means to be able to blush. Do you know any race that's able to blush? I do. And it ain't the Jew. Freemasonry was revealed by God himself to the first man. But a wise and good being would reveal nothing but what a tendency to encourage the practice of those precepts which were given to preserve the newly created man in the strict line of moral duty. Therefore, Masonry must be closely interwoven with the practice of religion. Read it again. It's not a religion, it's a science. Therefore, Masonry must be closely interwoven with the practice of religion. Its operative portion proceeded from the effects of human ingenuity stimulated by human necessity after the fall. It was merely an application of its principles to the benefit of man. Oh, yes, it's really, you know, I gotta say, if anything has benefited man, Freemasonry is what's done it, you see. Because through Freemasonry, they killed 100 million people, 60 to 100 million people over there in Bolshevik Russia. And I mean killed them like cowards. They gave the families one potato a week to live on until they died. And they would come by with carts every day to pick up the dead and knock on your door and ask if they had any dead. Yes, they took all the farms away from these people. Yes. Yes, they got the heads chopped off in France. They had a cowardly traitor named Napoleon who ended up taking 6 inches off the stature of the French men for the cause of Freemasonry. Yes, two-thirds of our race in the last 150 years, yes, it's been a very big benefit to man. You see, when you find out the only way that Freemasonry can be a benefit to man is when they're imprisoned, like what Hitler did. This was also discussed in this series, so go back and listen to it. I mean, if you have the, shall I say, generative principle to listen to it, or the cojones, or the, let me be a little vulgar here, the balls to listen to it. Freemasonry is the enemy of every country in this world. The Jew is the enemy of every country of this world. Has always been, and will always be until the day when Yahweh comes back to give them the real Holocaust. The real, not the lie Holocaust, not the fake Holocaust, not the supposed Holocaust, but this time it's going to be a real Holocaust. You see, and it's going to be done with the sickle. Yes, it's going to be done with the sickle, but it's not going to be done with Tubal Cain's hammer. No, not this time, Mr. Beneficent. Freemasonry is not beneficent. It's a dying institution, thanks be to Yahweh, and may all of you Shabbos Goy, I mean, primarily, I would like you to come out of it. It stemmed in Babylon. Yes, oh, I know what's going through your head. No, it was in Egypt, and then it came to... Yeah. It was revived in Babylon much before 1717, because Nimrod was a Mason. Come out of her, my people, says Yahweh. Come out of Babylon. Don't be partakers of her sins. There's still time, Shabbos Goy. You know what a Shabbos Goy is? I don't want to keep explaining it to you, but maybe you Masons don't know what that means. That's a Jewish term. Useful idiots. You are useful idiots, just like the Judeo-Christian who do the Jewish version of Christianity, just like the communists, just like the atheists, just like the Marxists, just like the left. A Shabbos Goy is somebody that's willing for a mere amount of shekels to become a slave of the Jew and destroy his own race. And I have already said this, and I'm going to say it again, because Mr. Freemason, I want you to know this. Not only does the Jew look at you as the bottom of the barrel, but we all look at you the same way. You are the bottom of the barrel. A race traitor is twice the child of hell of the Jew. If you would be a traitor to your God, and a traitor to your race, and a traitor to your country, how do you think the Jew sees you? Yet he'll use you as a tool. And that's exactly what happened. So let me tell you how you become a beneficent organization. Is when Hitler came into power, he took the parasitic Jew and his weapons, he took his weapons away from him, and his weapons being Freemasonry, his weapons being the press, his weapons being the banks and usury. And within a very short time, I believe it was 4 years, some people say more, within 4 years, they went from the bottom economy of Europe to the top economy of Europe. That's when you become beneficent to man. That's when Freemasonry does man some good. When you're tried and hung and dead, that's when you do good. And I'm warning you. And I mean, this is a stark warning. I'm nobody personally, okay? I'm just a common man. But I'm warning you that if you don't turn soon away from that and step out of that Babylonian institution and begin to repent of your sin and return to Yahweh, that you will receive the same fate as the Jew. And the Jew's fate, there will be no Jew in eternity. No quarter Jew, no third Jew, no half Jew, no Jew. And no Shabbos Goy Jew. So if you do not turn, they are going to be holocausted. They are going to be bundled up and burned. And you shall be with them. There will be no, excuse. Because here you've proven that you've done just as much evil as you do good. As equilibrium. So this has been a really good series. And it's the best series I've ever heard on Freemasonry. You can argue all day long. I'm not going to waste my time arguing with you. Let's just read on a little bit further here and see what else it has to say. In India, Egypt, and other nations, which very early became addicted to polytheism, it branched out into pompous ceremonial observances, shrouded in mystery and withheld from the profane. That's me, ladies and gentlemen. That's you, ladies and gentlemen. That's not the Freemason. They are gods. They are men who are on their way to perfection. They will be perfected men, in which will give us perfected government. But see, we don't need government. All we need is Yahweh and his laws. We don't need perfected man, and we don't need you, Shabez Goy, white race traitor. But still applied to the national religion and the worship of those gods which had been erected into objects of adoration and placed on the foundation which Jehovah, that's not Yahweh, which Jehovah himself had laid. Nor is there any single instance on record in which the mysterious institutions of any ancient nation in any part of the world, having the least resemblance to Freemasonry, excluded religion from a share in their solemn pursuits. On the contrary, religion was the main object of them all. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, yes, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. On the contrary, religion was the main object of them all. Whether the Orphic or the Eleusinian or the Gothic or Dionysian, whether the rites of Mithras or Bramba, of Pythagoras or the Druids, the Essenian or the Cassidian, all were instituted in the honor of religion, and all enforced the practice of those duties which religion recommends. Shall we then be told that Masonry, the very origin and foundation of all these systems, has no connection with religion? At least of all with Christianity? The perfection of religion? It is a fact which I shall endeavor to prove, that every credible writer on the subject of Freemasonry has publicly avowed his conviction that the most intimate alliance subsists between the two sister institutions, and has left behind him ample testimonies to repel this novel and very extraordinary opinion. Freemasonry, as practiced at the present day, commemorates particularly five great events in the history of the world, each typical of the Messiah. See, they never name his name. They just named all those other, gods and this and that, but they never name his name. Doesn't that ever make you wonder, Mr. Freemason? Why you can't say, let me say this word for you now. Now cringe all up on me now. Jesus, Yeshua, which means Yahweh saves. See, Jesus was Yahweh in the flesh, the Word of God. See, he's not the lost word of Freemasonry. He's never been lost. He's not the lost key of Freemasonry. He has the keys to hell and death. You see, Freemasonry isn't as good as Yahweh. Their so-called religion is a low-class religion. And you have believed all this nonsense that the Jew has put right in front of your face. Okay, so let me go on here. Why not? You know, I've got about 10 minutes. Freemasonry is practiced in the present day, commemorates particularly five great events in the history of the world, each typical of the Messiah. These are the vision of Jacob, where he beheld the celebrated ladder reaching from the earth to heaven, the offering of Isaac upon the Mount Moriah, when it pleased Yahweh, I'm not going to call him the Lord, see, because the Lord means Baal. When it pleased Yahweh to substitute a more agreeable victim in his stead. The miraculous deliverance from Egypt, bondage under the conduct of Moses. The offering of David on the threshing floor of Arana, the Jebusite. And the building of Solomon's temple. Now these extraordinary events which unequivocally point to our Savior. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, they're saying it here. It's a miracle. Listen to this. Now these extraordinary events which unequivocally point to our Savior Jesus Christ are the principal historical events contained in our lectures. Only we all know that they don't say that word. They don't say Jesus in the lodge. We know that. Okay? So that's very, very interesting. I've never seen that before. That's the first mention I've ever seen in any Masonic book. So, where does that leave us all? You see, they're controlling our countries, Mr. Freemason, through your organizations. The Jew has himself cocooned, and he has all of you in positions of the police force, the military, the government, the corporations, and the Jew is the invisible within the society, all cocooned and protected by you. If it wasn't for the Shabbos Goy, the Jew could never get away with all the things that he has done in the history of this world. If it wasn't for you, two-thirds of our race would not be dead right now. If it wasn't for you, there would have been no Federal Reserve. There would have been no ADL. There would have been no homosexuality. See, I know the Freemasons all agree with homosexuality. They'd have to. And everyone I've known has told me that they agree with it. I don't know what to tell you other than I gave you the warning. You better repent. You better seek Yahweh and His truth. You better leave Babylon. See, you are one of the tentacles of Mystery Babylon. And if you don't want to be partakers of their sins and their judgment, then you better come out and come clear. And you better do it real quick. Now, I don't want to be negative, but I don't believe any of you will. Because most white people just want to argue, and they think they know it all, and they're too proud. You see, their pride would hold them from admitting that they were wrong. But you are wrong. And this whole message series was not only for you, but it was there to give you a chance to turn away and turn to Yahweh. I guarantee if you do that, you will not be sorry. But if you do not turn away, you will be sorry, and I mean for good. You can be man perfected. You can be intellectual. You can believe that you're a god. But you are no god. You are not perfect. What happens to you when you get sick? You have to go to the doctor. If you were a god, you wouldn't need to go to the doctor. So if you're a god, what does that make the doctor? Haven't you ever thought of these questions? These simple questions? Well, my hope for you, I think this is the last part of this series for the time being. I am, however, going to discuss some Manly P. Hall next week, because there's a few interesting things from the Destiny of America that I wish to discuss. You could look at it as an extension, but it really isn't going to be on Freemasonry itself. However, it will be interesting. So you may wish to attend next week or listen later when you have a chance. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James. Until next time, study to show thyself approved.